We've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
And present to Marion Faithful.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
By sheer fluke to have a binge night about 3 weeks ago. And on YouTube, you can find lots of concert performances by her. So any of your listeners who know about her would know that. And those who don't really know much about Marion Faithful can enjoy her and commemorate her wonderful contribution to music and popular knowledge.
Yeah, what a great person she was.
Yeah, remarkable person, really, what she went through.
Yeah, you want to talk to us about, you want to pose the question, are you awake?
Yes. Are you awake? Well, it was my way of taking on a bit of a discussion about the pessimism associated with the rise of Trump and Dutton's seeming success at using the anti-woke sort of language, the derisory put down of people who are woke.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do with that, in a way, is just connect the discussion about, you know, what's going on with that silly debate with what's going on with wages. What do we know about what's going on with wages? What should we know? How awake should we be to the possibilities of wages? And then trace that connection through to, believe it or not, the poly crisis. You know, the connections to the climate crisis and environmental crisis in general, and the threat of war and so on. Because that's what the union movement used to do decades ago, is do a lot of education work. I don't mean informal classes, about the connections between all of these things. So we'll have a go today. Annie, the inflation figures came out this week, and they show inflation running at 2.4% for the so-called headline inflation, CPI, and then this is other thing called the underlying inflation rate that was invented in order to enable the Reserve Bank to make workers pay for inflation with high interest rates, and that's running at 3.2%. Now, both of those, what that demonstrates is that there is no way that anyone can claim that the wage increases over the past year or two are driving inflation. Inflation's going in the opposite direction. And
so what are you saying, that really the bosses just don't want to pay people for their work?
Well, of course they don't. Well, they want to pay them as least as possible. Of course they do. And that's what every employer aims to do. And some will go so far as to pay below the minimum requirements, which means they're getting into wage theft. I think that's still, you know, a real thing all across the society, particularly taking into account that the union movement has made a quantum leap in union density, actually, from about 12% to 13% and a bit. That's got a lot of happy clapping going. But nevertheless, very important, and it's in the right direction. The fellow who has done really good work on this that your listeners may already be paying attention to, but if not, I do recommend having a closer look at the work of Greg Jericho, who for more than 12 months really, but for the last 12 months has really been pinning down what's been happening to living standards as a result of wages suppression for the last 10 years. And he's traced out how long it would be for living standards to catch up if wage increases were at a certain level. And he says that the best that you can possibly, the scenario he picks on and says 2028, but that assumes pay increases just at a pretty low level.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I went to a meeting, a launch of CPSU Members' Voice the other day. there's going to be a rear guard action against the CPSU entrenched hierarchy, and they were pointing out that the latest EBA removes the gains of two previous EBAs from 2018. Like, it's like they've wiped off the board any gains in wage increases for since 2018 with their new EBA.
Well, shock horror. We have union members doing their own analysis of what's happening to their wages and its connection to living standards. Shock horror, I say, Riley, because this is exactly what we should be trying to do, actively encouraging union members themselves and potential union members to get together and start doing their analysis of what what's happening, rather than waiting for union leaders
who have become very comfortable on their seats, I'll have to say, and some of them, anyway.
I don't want to get drawn into that sort of
personal attack.
Most union leaders work bloody hard. Let me tell you, but they do not necessarily nail the right things, and I think there's good evidence that generally they are not. There are exceptions. There is. The actual results, I just think what you described needs to be replicated across every union, where potential members and members start doing their analysis, and where it is necessary, being the union, leading the union, to produce a much better wages strategy than what we have. The current strategy is not all doom and gloom. There are positive features to it. And in fact, just on its own terms, it is generally, it has some positive element, a positive story to tell relative to what the employers and Dutton and the Reserve Bank will offer in the next few months. So we have to be really straight about this. But the most important thing in your little anecdote is union members taking charge of the analysis. And that's what we need more of. Because in that process, they learn, and maybe they will grasp the nettle and start taking what they learn to people who have not yet joined.
And in regards to your article, like, or your little writing, you say, like, to present a counter to anti-woke or sentiment, or like a Trump ascendancy, or a Dutton ascendancy. I read a newsletter by Vijay Prashad saying, in analysis of Trump coming up, and he was sort of positing that really, rather than viewing it as a net loss, it presents just this. It presents an opportunity for people to seize the moment and, you know, awake.
The rest of the world has an opportunity to watch the USA as a laboratory. It is a laboratory to demonstrate just what a dead end Trumpism is for people in all parts of the world. And by the way, I think there are countries that are where the working class is far more awake than we are as to what is wrong with Trump's new imperialism. But that's, I want to come back to that in another way and finish, you know, just work our way through these connections. So the big question is, this is really basic, keep in mind 13% union density, a marginal increase, which is very positive. What should be the union claim in the annual wage review? Keep in mind the inflation rate is, was it 2.5%? Should it be 6%? 5%? 4%? Should it be 2%? Should it be 2.5%? Now, the answer sense, is secondary. It's very important if you are interested in speeding up the catch-up along the lines of Greg Jericho's analysis. But it's the question. Take that out. Imagine a PDF leaflet backed up with all sorts of memes, which some parts of the Indian movement are obsessed with. Imagine that question headlining it, and then some basic information that explains to the reader why they should tell everybody what their answer is, including the ACTU, who will be making a claim to the annual wage review process. What is the...
What you mean, creating a discussion, people actually involving themselves in the process?
Not a secret discussion amongst policy formers in the Labor movement, where the process of doing wages increases for workers and to workers is replaced by the cultivation of workers' consciousness and agency.
Yeah, because it, really what's been going on is that people feel as if things are done to them rather than having an involvement in the process.
Yes, and that means they doubt even the positive stories in the inadequate wages strategy that we have. They doubt it. What we want to do is reverse that and to build confidence. See, there are some very good things, outcomes in the current strategy. Undervaluing, but not many people know about them. But there are serious shortcomings, and that's what we're talking about.
I mean, it really does go back to some of the things you were saying before about are you awake? Because all this stuff about being woke, being bad, because... which is about, you know, what they're saying is you should be racist, you should be sexist, you should be all these things. But actually, we shouldn't be. We should be standing up, eh?
Yeah, well, we should not just... of course, we should be standing up against sexism and racism and against transphobia and...
And inequality, the economic inequality. I mean, even the mainstream American movies are now normalising homelessness.
Yes. Yes, and we can go on. And so anti-wokeism is being used to tell workers that the standard of living they've got is the best that
they can expect.
Is the best they're going to get, and they should be happy with it.
Yeah.
That's where we go into this next 3 months. The employers are now mobilising and getting on the offensive. And we see that in another separate channel of wages determination, which is what can be done to working hours, split shifts, starting and finishing times and so on, in the retail award, in what is called the award review process. Now, that's separate to the annual wage review. The annual wage review, for better or worse, when only outcome provides the new minimum rates for something like a quarter of the workforce, which is 3.7 million workers approximately. 3.7. Probably 2.6 million workers directly, and a minimum of 1 million and a bit more indirectly. Now, that's a minimum. There may well be more. That is a lot more than the 2.3 million workers covered by enterprise bargaining, where the purpose of enterprise bargaining wage outcomes is not for them to be flown on anywhere else. In the annual wage review, the potential for flow-on is embedded in the concept of it.
Yep, that's right.
And also the benchmark to prevent wage theft. If you like, the super exploitation, the super suppression of living standards.
Yeah, it's interesting you should bring this up because at the moment what you've got is the Mining Energy Union taking the Rio Tinto to Fair Work over same work same pay. And Rio Tinto is saying, how dare you make us pay our people the same amount for doing the same work? That's why we created those higher, you know, those outsourced tire companies. How dare you?
And incredibly, legitimately, the ACTU and the union movement generally can claim that the same pay legislation is a positive lift to living standards, and it's a good thing. It's a good story to tell. And we in the left must respect that, even though we might be critical, as I am, of their whole approach to the minimum wage structure and its flow-on potential. When they do something, they have done something like that, in other words, persuaded the Labor government to make changes to the law to enable equal pay for the same job, same pay for the same job, then they've done, that is a positive thing.
But it's so hard to make it actually happen. It's really interesting. It seems fair, but it's really hard to make it happen in real life.
Right. And that's right. And one reason for that is the union movement won't bite off the difficult piece of the apple by pursuing stronger right to strike provisions in the Fair Work Act. That's just, you know, they're just lost on that. The current union movement leadership is, and I think most of the middle levels of the union movement, just don't know how to pursue that, and that's a, we should have another talk about that. Now, the two connections. Firstly, the big one is into the election campaign, because for the first time in a long time, the annual wage review period coincides with the federal election. Dutton and the employers are actually vulnerable on the living standards question, is if the focal point is on wages. What is he going to say? No, the workers should not get six or five or four. And he will not even support what would probably be the government's formula of no slippage behind inflation. Inflation's 2.5%. He will probably not agree with the government when it says that the National Wage Review increase should be 2.5%. Now, that means his hypocrisy on living standards is in sharp relief. Thus, we can use his desire to focus on living standards with a counter-strategy that can work and lay a foundation to create a much better next government. Because guess who will probably switch on to a catch-up pay claim for the low pay? The Greens. I don't think many of the Teals will, because they just don't get that stuff.
Well, someone's calling them the Maroons now.
So we have this opportunity to go on the counter-offensive in a serious way. Imagine that sort of a leaflet that goes out, asking workers. It creates all sorts of discussion and can lead to action. And it reinforces the struggles against lockout, which is what is happening, is a really bad one.
The Opal workers.
The Opal one.
Now, people saying that it's a strike. No, it's a lockout.
It's a lockout. And so this is how we go on the offensive. The living standard, if we ourselves create working class agency that tackles living standards, then what would be the how, if you are getting a much better, if you're getting catch up in your pay, right, and you are learning about the value of solidarity, joining a union, what does that do to your attitude to the climate change reversal priority? It changes your whole attitude towards it, because there's a connection. Climate change is wrecking living standards. particularly for those subject to its disasters. So we draw the connection between the destruction of people's living standards, the undermining of them, the suppression of them, and the associated harm escalating against the natural world on which we all depend.
Well, that's that we have to finish there because we've scraped up to the last part of the hour, but that's a perfect way to finish, actually.
In the anti-war-making movement, that's the history of our union movement. Be strong on wages and you earn the credibility to be active in the anti-war movement and so on.
All right. All right.
So what do you think? 6-5 or 4?
6.
I think there's a role for 3CR to promote that one.
Okay. Talk to you soon, mate.
All the best. See
Bye.
You later.